Hey, Alex, can you hear me?
Yep. How's it
Okay.
going?
All right, are you ready? I'm good. Are you
I'm
good?
ready. Yeah, I'm
All right,
good.
here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to our Iditarod coverage here on Mushing Radio. Make sure you join us over on dogworksradio.com and check us out over on social media, searching for Dog Works Radio and calling in from his home in Los Angeles, California, is our co-host, Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. It's good to be home, but I am sort of missing Alaska and the snow and the mountains and all of that. So it's always good to be home, but I do kind of miss it up there.
To travel, I saw this morning on Danny Seavey's Facebook post where he said, today is the day where you can catch your breath and relax a little bit until about 8 p.m. Alaska time, and then it's time to stay glued to the trackers until we have a winter in Nome. So I guess you planned your trip right.
Yeah, it's more accidental than intentional, but it looks like I did a pretty good job of planning it. As you said, there's a lot of it's a relative down day. A lot of people are taking their 24s, as we had talked about yesterday. But we do have an interesting development, which is that Ali Zirkel is currently the furthest down the trail. Now, as we discussed yesterday, that's a little bit misleading because Ali has not stopped to take her 24 yet. And the other two, I would say at this point, main front runners right now, Nick Petit and Yor Laseth Olsom, are taking their 24s. Nick is taking his in Ophir, and Yor is taking his in Tekotna, which is the checkpoint that's famous for their pies and their other amazing food that they have there. Whereas Ali stopped briefly in Ophir and is continuing on to Iditarod. That's a relatively long run between Ophir and Iditarod. I think it's about 80 miles. And Ali had stopped for about 3 hours right in the middle of that run. And it looks like she just started going again as we're taping this now, like within about the last 5 minutes. So she is on her way to Iditarod, which is the halfway point. And it's not clear if she's going to take her 24 there or if she might even opt to continue a little bit further on. Most likely she would take her 24 there, but it's a very interesting turn of events in any case.
It is, and she is doing very well out there on the trail this year, as well as all of the top mushers, of course. They know exactly what's going on. They're professionals, and they're working their way down the trail and keeping that trail schedule a very closely guarded secret. I know we've talked about that before on the show, in particular in our off season. But I tell you what, it has been a day of news. A few quick stories that I read or heard about. The first one was sort of an Iditarod-related story and sort of not, but Iditarod veteran Monica Zappa is taking a couple of dog teams up the trail this year, sort of following the Serum Run route with her husband Tim Osmar, and currently they're in Shaktulik, which is one of the stops also on the Iditarod trail, and she had a quick video over on Facebook, and she said for the first time ever that she's been in that route, there is no sea ice. And I know that right there in Shaktulik is kind of a precarious situation for a lot of Iditarod mushers and along the coast there. But she is rather concerned. And a little bit of background about Monica, she has a master's degree in meteorology. So she is a weather person. And for someone to say what she said about it may being her last trip to Nome if things continue like this is something that we ought to listen to, don't you think?
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of times we like to think of the Iditarod as following the same trail every year. But in fact, it just basically hits the same checkpoints every year. And the actual routing of the trail is subject to changes from year to year, and even changes sometimes within the same year. And this year, because there was a lot of warm weather early on, and then there were some, there were issues with the earthquakes, and there were issues with some freezing and then thawing in some of the areas. There are a lot of places where the trail has been tweaked so that it is more following coastlines rather than going over frozen water. So that is something that is always subject to change, and I believe that they are going to be routing the race mostly around the coast in that area where Monica is right now, to avoid that very issue of not having enough real sea ice there.
Right. Another story that I read about this afternoon was the ever-present sleep deprivation and bad dreams on the trail. It was an interesting story. Did you catch that one, Alex?
I did, and we've talked about these things a bunch in the past, but it's interesting that it is seemingly coming up this early in the race. This is usually a factor, much later when mushers have been on the trail for a while and have not had a chance to sleep. But for, the race started on Sunday, and it's Wednesday evening as we're taping this, so that's not very far into the race for mushers to be suffering from this kind of sleep deprivation.
And right, and a lot of mushers do not sleep well, or if at all, until they take that first big 24-hour break, just because they're trying to rock and roll as fast as they can down the trail and get to that 24-hour checkpoint, and then they can really take time to relax and sort of regroup and rethink things as they head on down to that second third of the trail, is what we're going to talk about today a little bit about that second section of the mushing trail. But another quick update, and you probably have a little bit more on this than I do. I just got home from teaching class a little while ago. We had a scratch about 2 hours ago as we're taping this. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Shaney Traska scratched in Nikolai. She was down to 10 dogs from 14, and apparently this is not completely unexpected. She had a really rough time going through the Dalzell Gorge, and so she scratched in Nikolai. And, of course, the language that you usually get from the ITC is that mushers will scratch for the good of their dog team, which is what was reported. I don't have a lot more information than that, but it seems like it's probably a combination of her being beaten up just a little bit by going down through the gorge, and then her having lost a bunch of dogs early. You can finish with as few as 5 dogs, but to only have 10 dogs when you're that early in the race, I think is really pushing it. And maybe she felt that her remaining dogs that she had on the dog team wouldn't be able to get her all the way to Nome. And of course, as we've discussed a lot, the goal for a lot of mushers, especially the mushers who aren't really in a position where they can potentially win the race, the goal is to provide a really good experience for the dogs to make this a very, very pleasurable run for the dogs, so that perhaps a year or two later, when the dogs are a little bit better or a little bit more seasoned, they will be able to be much more competitive. So it's not exactly clear which one of those is the case, but it seems to me that it's probably one of those things that we've discussed.
And remember, guys, this is the first year where the dog team number went down from 16 to 14. So when you're missing 2 extra dogs and you only have 10 dogs left, it is an interesting scenario when you've lost those 2 dogs and you only have a smaller pool to choose with. So the next story I want to talk about, you talk about getting beaten up with out on that first third of the race. And I think it was Jesse Holmes that had some issues with his sled. I guess it broke up along the trail there in the Dazzle Gorge or the Farewell Burn or some section of that trail. And he had to do some emergency repairs there on the trail. And I say that because I know you've mentioned it here on our broadcast this year, but that's one of the main reasons why they ship those second sleds typically to McGrath, because it's just so of a beat up type trail for not only the mushers, but also the dogs and the sleds as well. But then again, once they have that faster sled there at about that second, third start, it's a little bit easier of a trail going forward, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. You know, speaking of the Dalzell Gorge, I was looking at some of the coverage today, and it looks like there were a few other we're starting to get reports filtering in about a few other teams that had problems in the gorge. Nicholas Weikstrand apparently was dragged sideways towards open water, and he got beaten up a little bit down there. Blair Braverman flipped her sled, landed on her elbow before she was able to get things righted and get back on the way. So that is, even though we have not seen the type of really drastic and violent reports of damage that we have in past years, that's never an easy section of the trail to go through.
Right. And as we said, it does get a little bit easier from here in the second third of the race as they work their way towards the Yukon and then up the Yukon to the coast, where we say that the last third of the race takes place. And in this area, as we mentioned, a lot of the teams will begin to take those 24-hour rests. But what's also happening on the trail in this second third is a lot of these checkpoint awards are awarded. The first to the halfway point, the first to the Yukon, all of these very cool awards are given to these mushers along the trail. And I think that's a really interesting way to do it. I know Nick Pettit got an award, I guess it was last night, maybe this morning, and he was only in the checkpoint for just a minute or two. And it was a pair of beaver mitts and a really nice beaver hat. And I guess he thanked the presenters and pretty much just went on his way. And I would assume we'll collect those prizes much later after he gets to Nome. Is that right?
Yeah, the prizes are presented on the trail and then they're represented at the finisher's banquet in Nome. So it's kind of a cool thing. And sometimes the mushers will stop for a longer period of time, but often it's right at the checkpoint and the sponsors come in and there is a little bit of media there and there are pictures taken and video taken. And then shortly after 5 or 10 minutes or whatever, the mushers will just continue on down the trail.
Right. And of course there's typically large sums of money that are available at these checkpoints for the awards. And as we said a couple of days ago, sometimes the mushers that know they're not going to be in the big money will really push themselves to get one of these bigger awards so they can have a little bit of a less of a financial burden on the race expenses by winning one of these awards that may be $2,000, $3,000, $4,000. But the biggest award, at least on the trail, is the first to the Yukon award, I believe it is, where they get the big dinner. Is that correct?
Right. They get the big dinner, which is cooked on cook stoves by one of the chefs from the lakefront, which is the longtime Iditarod headquarters hotel and a primary sponsor of Iditarod for many, many years. So that's always a cool award. I know there's also a first to the coast award that's given to the first team to come into Unalakleet. There is the Spirit of Alaska award, which is given to the first team into McGrath, and then the Dorothy G. Page award for the first to the halfway point, which this year is the checkpoint of Iditarod, and it is looking very much like Ali Zirkel is probably going to win that award sometime later this evening.
And with these awards, as you said, they're presented in Nome at the Finishers Banquet. And one kind of interesting tidbit to that dinner award, to the first one to the UConn, not only do they get that spread there at the checkpoint and they lay it all out, I think it's a 7-course meal, is they are also given that same dinner for two people, the musher and his guest, anytime during the next year at the lakefront, which I think is a cool thing to do. You can have your cake and eat it too, I guess.
Exactly. I have a couple quick updates on things that we covered yesterday. We talked about the dog that had from the Finger Lake Lodge that had run all the way to Rainy Pass, and we have a little bit more information on that dog. His name is Dylan, and apparently he was a Didi Genro dog who was given to the owners of the Finger Lake Lodge. So it's not surprising that a dog who was Didi Genro's dog and presumably trained with some of her her racing dogs would be inclined to go up the trail with the other dogs. And the other thing is we had talked about rests yesterday, and there was a question about whether you could combine a 24-hour rest with your 8-hour rest on the Yukon. And I looked that up a little bit earlier, and it looks like those rests have to be separate. So you can't combine your 24 with your 8-hour Yukon River rest, I don't have any strong feelings about that. I think it probably does make sense to break them up because that way you have a little bit more rest, but it does deprive the race of having that sort of Yukon Quest style super rest in the middle.
Right. And what would be interesting going back to those awards, and I don't know if this has happened before, but if a person won that award and took his 24-hour rest at the same time where he received that first to the UConn award, he could really let that dinner settle. He or she could really let that dinner settle and really enjoy themselves during that time. I don't know if that's possible, but if a person did that, I think they could probably claim just about every other award along the trail. You had mentioned the Spirit of Alaska and the Halfway Award and the First of the Yukon. It would probably be the same person, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you know, in a lot of years, the same person will win multiple of those awards, and then other years, it's just there. We've had years where the lead is just going back and forth between two or three people for most of the second third of the race.
Right. My last story before we jump over to our musher profile, and I definitely want to make sure that we give this profile some extra time today because it's one heck of a story, is there's been a lot of talk on social media and on the news networks about Ali Zirkel and the Year of the Woman. And she and Jesse Royer are really putting the pedal to the metal and doing very well. And it realistically could be the Year of the Woman on the Iditarod Trail. I know that makes you quite happy, doesn't it, Alex?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I really like about Iditarod is and sled dog racing in general is that the women and the men compete on an equal playing field, and that is very, very unusual in pretty much all sports. So it's exciting to me that that there are so many strong female competitors this year, and you know, between Ali Zirkel and Jesse Royer, I think you're looking at two top five finishes between those two.
It sure would be a treat to have a lady win the Iditarod. It's been a long time, I believe, since Susan Butcher in the late 90s, mid 90s was the last time that a woman won the Iditarod. So I think that would be a very special place this year and in Iditarod history going forward. So let's jump over to the musher profile for this evening. When you and I were talking off air before the show was recorded, I wholeheartedly agreed with your pick today and our story that we want to tell. I also saw the very moving story on Facebook and other places this morning, but I want to let you tell it. Who are we talking about today?
So today we are talking about Brent Bruggerman, who is, I believe we had featured him as one of our Musher profiles last year as well. He is a dentist in Great Falls, Montana, specializes in root canals. He named his kennel Skinny Legs Sled Dog Kennels after his son Spencer, who was born with a vascular condition in his left leg, so that the blood supply is disrupted, and that makes his leg a little bit shorter and skinnier than the left leg than the other leg. And he and his siblings were all like very competitive and very athletic, but because of this condition, by around age 11, it became clear that he wouldn't be able to play traditional sports like football or baseball on a really competitive junior high and high school level. When Spencer was 10, he became obsessed with Jack London novels. At the same time, his dad was reading a book about the Yukon Gold Rush, and they both became separately, without realizing it was happening to the other, became obsessed with the idea of sled dogs and dog sledding. They started reading everything they could get their hands on about the sport, and then they decided that this would be a really fun thing to pursue as a family for both Spencer and his dad, Brett. And that's where they came up with Skinny Leg Sled Dogs. They were they're from Montana, so they were working with Jesse Royer and Doug Swingley. Doug Swingley's dogs provided the initial bloodlines for his kennel. They have developed the kennel so that they now have, I believe, about 30 dogs. And of those 30 dogs, they're going to have 24 dogs participating in the Iditarod this year. Not only do we have Brett's team of 14 dogs, but also there are other skinny-led sled dogs who will be running under Emily Maxwell's team. Emily was a rookie last year and met Brett on the trail. And at the last minute, she was looking for dogs that she could run in this year's Iditarod. And so she's going to be running his younger dogs, his puppy team. This year, Brett's dog team includes veterans Scabs and Browning, who led the team a year ago. And he says he has a new superstar called Greg, who is an exceptional dog and led most of the races in the lower 48. He's just 3 years old, and he is a big, tall, well-built sled dog. Scabs is a dog of Brett's who eats and eats and eats, and Brett said he'll stay fat and happy the whole race. He's finished Iditarod three times, once with Brett last year and twice with Jesse Royer. And Browning, his other real superstar dog, he said that he was a great leader last year in Iditarod, and whenever he's having a hard time finding the trail, he puts Browning up front, and Browning always finds the trail very easily. One cool thing about Brett is that when he first started getting into dog sledding, when he'd been working with dogs for about 6 months, he competed in the Race to the Sky dog sled race near Lincoln, and he finished, but he said that he was way out of his depth. He got the Red Lantern that year, and then just a little bit earlier this year, he won that race. So that's sort of a nice thing to be able to do after just a few short years of mushing. And this year, just jumping right to this, this year there was a post that the Skinny Legs Sled Dog Kennel put up, where they talked about all of the mandatory gear that Brett and all the other mushers are bringing, and then it had a list of extra gear that isn't required but that he's bringing. And then I'm just going to read this. It says that the last item that they have in the and that they're carrying is a silk flag. And he says, a few weeks ago, their kennel received this message. Dear Suzette, Brett, and Spencer, my name is Danny. I'm from Iowa. I wanted to let you know what an inspiration your family is to me. I'm currently going through cancer treatment at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. I follow all of your races, and they give me the strength to keep going and fighting. It also gives me something to look forward to, checking your race standings. I just wanted you to know that not only are you an inspiration to Dog Sledders, but a great role model and a vision for people who need to see someone overcoming trying times. Keep up the amazing work. You have a forever fan in Iowa. Sincerely, Daniel Brown. And Danny Brown is a paramedic and firefighter in Chicago, and she was stuck with a dirty needle on a shift and was taking antiretroviral medication after the needle stick, and that led to a rare form of liver cancer. And after they got this message and learned about Danny's story, Brett had an idea that he wanted Danny to send him something that he could take with him on the trail to commemorate her cancer battle and carry to Nome in her honor. So he says the final piece of cargo in Brett's jam-packed sled is a tribute flag for Danny with her inspirational motto, "You don't know how strong you are until being strong is your only option." And the flag is made of silk and is a very fragile fabric, so it would be torn up in the wind in a few minutes. So Brett is carrying it in a special pouch inside his sled. And this post has been shared on Facebook more than 100 times, and the kennel encouraged people to leave encouraging messages for Danny and say where they're from. And the last time I looked, there were over 1,000 comments from literally all over the world. And, you know, this is a guy who is not going to win the Iditarod. He finished 39th last year as a rookie, which is a very respectable finish. And hopefully he'll do better this year. But, you know, I every year you hear about a couple of stories like this, and it really kind of it's really very inspiring for me, and it's so wonderful that that Brett is able to use this sled dog race, which I'm sure is very meaningful to him for a lot of different reasons, to inspire other people and to bring a real a whole other level of meaning to what he's doing. And it's an amazing story, I think.
You know, when I read that this morning, I had the exact same thoughts that you did. What an inspiration and what courage that Danny is taking fighting this horrible disease, sickness with cancer. But man, what a way to get cancer, doing something like he was doing or she was doing as a firefighter. And then of all things, getting stuck with a needle and then that, of course, turning into a rare form of cancer. Man, what a hazard of the job. And I can only commend her for doing her brave work as a first responder. And my hat's off to her and, of course, for Brett for showing that inspiration along the trail. I think that's a great way to commemorate the fight that she's going through. So yeah, great story, and I'm so glad we were able to share that. And like we said, we want to showcase these stories that many people don't hear about when they're watching the nightly news about Iditarod or just brief stories about the leaderboard or whatever. It's these little stories that we like to read about and share. And I think that's what motivates us to keep going on our show, is to find these little tidbits and share them with other people. Don't you agree?
I absolutely do. And you know, I think for me, it's really exciting to hear about Allie Zirkel and Nick Petty and Martin Boozer and Yor and Jeff King and these great mushers and great champions. But it's also just so inspiring to me to learn about these middle and back of the packers. So that is really one of the things that I always try to concentrate on when we're doing our coverage.
I agree. So, Alex, we're just about out of time. I want to ask sort of your fans' opinion. What do you think is going to happen in the next 24 hours now that things are really shaken out? And by the time we're on air tomorrow, we're going to know who the true leaders are of this year's race, at least in the top 10 or 15 or so. What do you think is going to shake out over the next day or so?
So I think that Allie Zirkel will be taking her 24. Nick and Yor, as well as people like Aaron Burmeister and Jesse Royer and Matt Hall and a bunch of other really, really strong competitors will be coming off their 24. So they'll be moving up as well. And I think we're going to start to see the top five or the top 10 solidify, and the lead will go back and forth over the next few days. But it seems like tomorrow we should have a good idea of a top 10 that will include the ultimate winner.
Right. Yeah. Looking forward to it. And I look forward to being on the show with you tomorrow, Alex. It's always a pleasure. Glad you made it home safe, and we'll talk again soon. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you. On behalf of my co-host, Alex Stein, this is Robert Forto for Mushing Radio. Make sure you tell your friends about our show and have them hit that subscribe button over on any podcast app that they can find, and they will get an update as soon as our show drops. Until next time, we'll see you guys then. Goodbye.